Music makes people come together at festivals, gigs and clubs. We share epic moments. Best friends for the entire set or the rest of our lives. Heineken, live your music. To get your hands on tickets to all the best gigs and festivals, visit heinekenmusic.ie. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Here I am, Roisin Murphy, and you're listening to The Sync Sessions, brought to you by Heineken, Live Your Music.
So in case you're new to The Sync Sessions, I've teamed up with Heineken, Live Your Music to create this series. The debut episode, which went straight in at number one, if you don't mind, features electro-funk superstars Groove Armada. Then I also had the little darlings that are Vinny and Dave from Django Django and Little Dragon. We had very honest chats and, yeah, probably a bit nerdy if you're into music. So check them out. It's fab to be back here doing the Sync Sessions, and I'll be chatting to somebody exceptionally interesting and very talented today, and his name is Daniel Avery. Hello, Daniel. Welcome to the Sync Sessions. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So let's get started. I mean, I was going to talk to you about your very beginnings in music. How did you... Did you have your own little studio when you were growing up as a kid, or
I had a little four-track recorder in my bedroom as a teenager, just really like a really old drum machine and a couple of guitars and pedals and stuff. But I had no idea what I was doing with it or what kind
at
of
what
music.
At what age did that
about
begin?
14, 15, I guess.
Yeah.
I really loved quite heavy guitar music, like Black Sabbath and Caius and stuff. But I also liked like more like fast glitchy electronic stuff, so like Square Push or something like that. So I'd be fascinated to hear what it sounded like. I've no idea what happened to the recordings of it.
Oh no, that's but, terrible.
It might have been awful. Probably was awful, but that's how I first started.
There might be some good samples on there.
Maybe.
Though.
I have no idea where it is.
Oh, never mind. But if you scrabbled around in your mum's attic long enough, you'd
find
it.
Yeah, I might do it at Christmas. Yeah.
And when did you, I know that you got a big chance working at Fabric as a resident DJ, and that was more or less how you started kind of professionally to DJ and to kind of make music, is that right?
Yeah, well I started, back in my mid-teens when I was doing all this music, I had no idea about DJing. And like, to me, DJing was something that other people did. I actually wasn't even in my field of vision at all.
Right.
I started DJing when I was 18. There was this alternative club in Bournemouth where I grew up. Before that, I just thought clubbing was for idiots. Mm-hmm. Growing up somewhere like Bournemouth, you know, a lot of stag parties, Hindus, that sort of
reveling
thing.
Reveling everywhere.
Yeah, that not my sort of thing. So, until I stumbled across this club, and I just hung out every week to the point where the guy who ran it asked if I wanted to start playing some music at the start of the night. That's when I was 18, and I just caught the bug immediately.
Yeah. And how were you DJing? In what way? With records? With CDs?
With boxes of CDs. Uh-huh. Boxes and boxes of them. And that's how I started. And Fabric came along a few years later. But yeah.
And were you playing club music at this point?
A little bit, but there was only a very small percentage of what I was playing. So
how was that working in Fabric that you weren't
Fabric, club music? Fabric, by Fabric time a few years later, was more club-based. But I started off playing more like post-punk and new wave stuff, alongside the odd bit of electro clash or maybe like the odd sort of warpy kind of electronic thing, but it was a real mixture back then, and it kind of slowly became more club focused, particularly when I got to Fabric. But you know, I definitely don't come from a techno background. That's not how I started.
In all the songs that you've picked for your top 10, and even listening through to your kind of compilations and things, I'm not hearing much bangdy bangdy buffdy buffdy four on the floor. If anything, I'm hearing kind of more like memories or traces of something to do with the club.
Yeah.
And yet there's a sort of mystery or more of a dreamlike quality to your selections. Is that what you're playing when you play in clubs, or do you go a bit harder when you go into the clubs?
I really like that description. Techno is I love techno, but I think it's only one small part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like how you said like a memory of a club or something, because I think that's how I look at it. I like it to be, my music to be influenced by the club, but I want it to spread its wings a bit further than that, you know. So yeah, in a club, I mean, it's techno based, but I want to...
You're pushing the boundaries as far as you can.
I don't know about that, but yeah, I want to try and push myself further, yeah.
Yeah. But do you think that your choice actually as a live DJ is in any way compromised by the fact that you are playing to a group of people in a club for a night out? As it were.
There's a certain responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think I've got to a stage now where 95% of the people I play to know, have an idea of what they might expect from me, and that's not going to be your straight, I don't know how to put it, you know, it's not just going to be a basic techno thing. It's going to be a bit, I don't know.
What I mean is there's more and more of these kind of wonderful artists, you know, cerebral type people, you know, making music on the one hand, that's almost like, and then DJing on the other hand. And sometimes the music, to me, sounds a bit like a relief. They're making music out of, like, to relieve themselves from what they have to do almost in a live environment.
I think that is a good point, actually. And I think particularly on this most recent album, Song for Alpha, I think it was something... It was possibly me trying to find my place in between those two worlds.
Yes.
For me, the clubs and the road itself is really busy, and the only way to survive it is to kind of throw yourself deep into it.
Mm-hmm.
But then for me, the studio, it is an escape, a quiet moment, a place to take a breath. And my life is very much divided into those two sections.
Yes.
And I think the album is me trying to find my space in between them.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get by, you know.
And so going back to Fabric, and then they gave you a chance, they gave you this Fabric Live mixtape to do, mix CD.
Yeah, no one knew who I was back then. They took a massive chance on me.
And that was amazing. And then that just sort of kick-started.
Yeah.
What exactly happened after that?
At the same time, within... the same year, I signed to Fantasy, Errol Arkan's label, and everything changed from there. So I was, at that time, making what would become the Drone Logic album. In fact, in this studio in Strong Room, just in another studio over the road. Everything just kind of changed overnight, really. It just started DJing loads more. It gave me the confidence to push myself in the studio, and... then the Drone Logic album came the following year, and another stage happened in my life.
Mm-hmm. And Errol was a mentor to you. Like, he's quite met a lot of people, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I actually, to go back to the DJing side of things, Errol was one of the first DJs who I went to see who made me think, that's what DJing can be.
Mm-hmm.
He came from a similar background to me musically, and had this wide spread of music, yet was able to make it all work together in the same setting. I would put someone like Optimo in the same camp, or Ivan Smag, or they were characters, Andy Weatherall, of course, like, they were characters who I was drawn to these people because I felt some sort of connection with them, and they were able to draw a line between all these different genres and make it work. So I'd go to Trash, I'd make the pilgrimage to Trash quite often, Errol's club in London. And yes, and then several years later, I signed to his label, and it all kind of made sense. And it was a perfect fit, I think.
How long have you been signed to that now?
Six or seven years or something.
That's quite something, actually.
Yeah,
isn't it?
And we mix it, all the tracks together, and it's we become great friends, and it feels a very natural fit, very organic fit.
Yeah, I went to Trash a few times back in the days as well. It was great, absolutely brilliant. He's got a great presence as well. He's got this kind of magnetism.
Yeah, he really has, yeah.
And so having this kind of structure, support, it sounds like a nice family structure almost.
That's a really
around
good way
you.
Of putting it, yeah.
And go to this album, and I hear that you wrote, like Kylie Minogue, your record, you did like three times as much as you needed.
Is that what she does?
And then you whittle it down. I think that's what pop music...
Yeah, sure.
Like, pop albums are often like that. They do far, far too many things, and then they...
Yeah.
But so how did you manage to whittle it down?
It took me a long time. I mean,
Tell me how many tracks you...
I don't know exactly. Close to 100, I reckon.
Oh, my God.
I kind of lost my mind at several stages of doing it.
That's always a good thing, isn't it, when you're making music?
Yeah, that's what you want. So Drone Logic came out 5 years ago, and I kind of got back in the studio immediately, and I've been making music ever since.
Yes.
This second album, eventually, I believe, taught me a lot about the importance of having patience in music, and this idea of kind of taking a step back and almost allowing the music to have a bit of a life of its own and not trying to force anything. I think that definitely happened several times during the course of the 5 years of me thinking it should sound a certain way. It was only when I took a step back and this idea of music eventually finding you if you just let it have its own life and energy. I don't know exactly how I picked the stuff, but when the time did come and I just relaxed a bit, then it kind of formed itself. I know that's a really pretentious way of putting it, but I feel as if it did have a life of its own in the end. Mm. It just kind of worked. And I think a big part of it, going back to what we said earlier, was that I wanted it to have one foot in the world of techno, but for it to have a life beyond it. And yes. And that's, I think, what kind of decided the track listing.
The track listing. And how many tracks are on there?
14, I think, 13.
So 13 or 14 out of 100, that is quite a job.
There's still a lot left, yeah. And
and do you like some of what's left? Or?
Well, I do. I'm very fond of a lot of the stuff. And in fact, this year we put out 3 EPs in addition to the album that all had their own tracks on them because there was so much left that I liked. So that's been, it's been, you know,
so
it's been really nice.
The 3 EPs were totally different music to what's on the
album. Yeah, they each had a single from the album and then two or three extra tracks on them that weren't on the record, or more actually. So it's been quite a positive release for me to finally get all this stuff out there.
The artwork is really pretty. It's very kind of pixelated colours. And what kind of formats do you put out these EPs and albums out?
Always vinyl.
Yes.
So that's always been important. I've always loved physical music. I think probably from working in a record shop too is a big part of that.
Yes.
I always knew that the artwork's always decided, thinking about the vinyl first and foremost, I think.
What else do you think from working in the record shop? What was the name of the record shop?
Pure Groove.
And where was that?
It used to be in Archway, and then it moved to Farringdon.
Right. And you worked there for
quite a long time, several years, yeah.
And what did that do for you, do you think?
That's a good question. I loved working there. I loved every moment of it. I met some incredible people, and I actually met some people who I ended up working with musically. James Greenwood, who was Ghost Culture, who I work with a lot in the studio. Kelly Lee Owens, who is the voice of Drone Logic, she worked there. That on the one hand, that was amazing. I think there were positives and negatives, actually, if I'm honest. Even though I loved my time there, I think if I had my time again, I'm not sure if I wanted to see behind the curtain so much of the industry.
Why?
I think it can make you think differently. I think it can, on your lower days, it can make you think, it can make you second guess why maybe something is popular or why does something work. I think it can, if you're not careful, take the creativity out of it.
Yes.
And it's probably...
Even working in a record shop can do that.
I think so.
Because you're seeing what's working and what isn't working, who's buying what, where it's going.
I think so. And, there was an interesting time when I worked there. It was an era in which the whole industry was changing. Like, physical records were dying out at that point and streaming hadn't fully taken hold yet. And it was a very transitional period. And I think there was a lot of confusing...
mixed messages.
I think so. I'm this is not a huge part of my life, you know, that stalling creativity. It's a small part of what happened with me making music. But I do think...
You can know too much.
I think that's possible, yeah.
I think that's very true. You know, I've been stuck in... I remember one time I was stuck with an artist in a porta cabin and they just reeled off the names of all the people who worked in the record companies and the whole process and how it all worked, ins and outs, and I was shocked, to be honest, you know.
Yeah, it's so boring.
And it's so boring, and, you know, didn't really do them any good in the end, as far as I can tell. They kind of did came and they went, these artists. So sometimes a bit of ignorance is bliss.
I fully believe that. And I mean, I'm pretty sure that it didn't have a huge impact on me. I think I was able to stop myself before I had too many of those thoughts, but they were there. Mm. Yeah.
You went away for a year, or stopped making music for a year after your first flush of making music. Mm. You stopped, you went off it, or you, yeah, and you kind of relaxed and gave it up kind of for a while, and then came back to it a year later. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so that was when I first moved to London, really. So I was DJing a lot, and I guess just sort of the first move. I was in my early 20s, and sort of London took over my life a bit. And then I got the job in a record shop at Pure Groove. And then it shut. It closed its doors for the final time. And that was a huge turning point in my life. So at that point, I wasn't really making music. And this turning point was right in front of me. And I thought, okay, it's either now or never if I'm going to make a go of it. And that's when I just knuckled down. I just borrowed every bit of equipment I could, borrowed studios, and decided to try and take it more seriously. And that, I think, was probably the biggest turning point in my life up until that point, of just being able to just take it a bit more seriously. And I'm glad I had that break, because it showed me what I eventually wanted to do. But it was
and in the time of that break, were you thinking you weren't going to go back to music?
Or I had no idea, really. I was happy to. I was working in a record shop, and I was happy just to be within music in some form. But then I think to be faced with that reality of, like, you either can be selling other people's records or you can make your own. And I knew at that point what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Listening to the selections that you make as well, there seems to be a lot of ambience. Mm. You're interested in ambient music, is that right?
That's true, yeah.
Is that also another aspect of this, like a respite from the club culture?
Yeah, the sound of the banging drum. That's exactly what it is, I think.
So you're really, that's what's drawing you into this kind of...
I think so. I love that idea of being able to take a breath away from it all, you know, drawing music and ambient music. I mean, to me, to be honest though, I think I get a similar feeling from all of it. It all feels like, all my favourite music I would describe as psychedelic music in some form, you know, music that can take you somewhere else, you know. But yeah, I do like that feeling of music that can make the outside world feel just inconsequential whilst it's playing.
Yeah.
And I get that from
it's painterly as well, isn't it? It makes pictures.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
It's on the rise again, I think. I think for that very reason, it's such an antidote to the kind of madness of the club music, certainly, and maybe just even the general world outside being
just so much negative energy flying around in the world right now. I think that's probably part of this.
Yeah.
The antidote, yeah.
Absolutely. So your new album, it's called Song for Alpha.
Yeah.
Why is it called that?
That's another good question. How do I put this properly? It's an ode to something in my past that has been important in my life for a very long time. But I feel like I want to keep it to myself, if I'm honest. Boring answer here, but yeah.
Okay, no problem.
That's it. Yeah.
No problem. I started my musical career in Sheffield, and I'm hearing a fair amount of Warp influence in your work.
Yeah.
So you've been compared, I think, to some of these Warp, early Warp artists, like, well, Square Pusher and Ortega.
Yeah.
Is that your kind of thing?
Yeah, it had a huge influence on me at an early stage of my life. I think what I love about all of that music is that it's machine music, but it has a real human heart to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could trace that back to Kraftwerk or something, you know, that did the same thing, but I've always been drawn to that. It's, it has a sort of human pulse to it. And I'm happy to set, well, you know, I'm staring up at these giants, but I'm happy to be staring up at them, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, I think you're doing all right. but, yeah, I mean, strangely, Warp means a lot to me as well, even though, obviously, I'm not that type of music, or I haven't been. But the warmth is there because it was actually there in the company, I think. And
yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, they were lovely people that yeah. run it and everything. So, oh, I simply lovely. Anyway, next, what am I going to ask you now? Are you touring a lot at the moment?
I'm playing a lot at the moment, yeah.
DJing.
DJing, and I've just come off tour with Nine Inch Nails in America, opening for them.
Doing your own stuff.
Yeah, doing a short live set, which has been my first steps into doing that. And it's been a really fascinating experience for me.
How many people on stage? Just you?
Just me.
So how is it live? How does it work?
It's a lot of effects pedals and that kind of thing. And I've made a lot of music specifically for this. I knew I was going to be opening these big theatres and I didn't want to just go hammer and tong immediately. So I wanted to, make something that would facilitate the night as a whole, if you will. And Nine Inch Nails were like a huge band for me growing up.
Incredible.
Yeah, like one of, and they're like better than ever live now. It's been amazing to stand at the side of the stage and watch them every night. So it's been quite a surreal experience for me to do it, but an amazing one, like one of my favourite things I've ever done, for sure.
Sounds like you've had a lot of these full circle situations.
Yeah, it's nice, right? It's nice when that circle gets completed. There. Yeah,
that's great. And so can anything go wrong with your live set?
It hasn't done so far. I'm sure it could do.
Touch wood there while you say
that. Oh, yeah, good job. I'm touching it hard.
Things could go wrong, though.
Yeah, but they didn't this time.
That's good. Yeah. And what kind of touring party do you have when you're doing that? Just one person to help you?
That's it, just two of us.
How nice would that be? Yeah. I have to drag them all with me, whole gang. When you're DJing a lot, it's hectic, is it? It's hardcore.
I still love it, but
a lot of space between, I mean, miles between one gig and another gig.
Yeah, and I mean, DJing itself is rarely anything less than a total pleasure, but everything else that goes with it can be pretty trying, and the road itself is really hectic. You know this, of course. Mm-hmm. So yeah, for me, it, being able to find that balance between that lifestyle and then my home life, which I want to keep entirely separate and for it to be entirely different too. I still haven't found the perfect balance, and I'm not sure if there is one, but it's I think that's part. I think it's actually influenced the sound of the music as well, trying to find that space in between the two.
Where do you live? Where do you call home?
Just up the road here in London.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have a radio show as well, don't you, on NTS?
I do. I've just done a year of it, and I'm just about to take a bit of a break from it. Mm-hmm. But I've loved doing it, yeah.
I did a show for them with DJ Coase.
Oh, nice.
Two of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the one with the window out to the square and everything.
Too, yeah.
So all the weirdos come up from the square and talk to you.
Yeah. It's a cool little place, that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's lovely.
Yeah.
Is there a difference in how you program your radio show to your DJ show?
Yeah, I think I always want the radio shows to feel more like an album, so the quiet moments and the loud moments to be pretty far apart. Mm-hmm. So that's been a really nice exercise for me, just to kind of expand everything again a bit further.
Yeah,
yeah.
And do you do any talking in between?
Only a little bit.
Can you give me any tips?
I've got none. Can you hear me?
It's a big question. What are your thoughts on the current state of electronic music?
Well, I think it's really healthy at the moment.
Why?
Why? I feel as if there's some artists out there who are really doing their own unique thing. I'm talking about the electronic underground, really. I mean, there's a lot happening on the surface that I don't really know much about nor care about, but the underground itself, I think, is exciting, and I think there's lots of different genres coming together and sort of being forced together in an interesting way, and a lot of new artists coming through. There's also, even if some may find it cynical at the moment, there's a lot of new female artists who are having a light shone on them, and with good reason. You know, it's been a very, like, blokey industry for a very long time, and now now the door's been opened wide open for everyone. And I think obviously that has made a huge impact, and there's been some incredible female artists coming through.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's had a big impact.
And it's essentially a different kind of voice, you think?
I think so, yeah. I think it's, yeah, I do think that. It seems as if maybe because, I mean, I can't obviously can't speak for the artists themselves, but it almost feels as if because there's, feels like there's maybe less to lose, or there's just a sort of greater desire there, that those artists are taking more chances.
Mm.
And that's where the excitement comes from. You know, you can't just, it's not just a white bloke industry anymore.
Right.
Which is obviously an amazing thing. And it's been a long time coming, this change, but...
it never even, you know, didn't even used to occur to people, you know,
yeah,
why there wasn't any girl DJs,
yeah,
or...
I know, and then, like, finally, yeah, exactly.
But, it just didn't even occur to even me, you know, when I was a teenager,
right,
and I was going out.
Yeah, I never, I don't think it was ever, well, I mean, it was oppressive in some regards, but I don't think it was ever, like, aggressively oppressive.
No,
it,
no, the, it
it's
wasn't
just how
like,
it was, in a way, you know.
It wasn't that maybe that, I mean, there was always some female DJs and stuff, but yeah. It is nice to get those different kinds of voices into music across the board, whether it's electronic music or whatever. And then, of course, it would be nice to see women running things a little bit more too.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, behind the scenes. But the technical people were never women. It was always men that were in. You know, I think you give boys Meccano and you give girls, you know, Dolls. And I think people have stopped doing that now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Starts from there. I believe that it starts there. That, you know, you have a responsibility when you have children to try and break down those boundaries. But I don't believe in positive discrimination.
No.
For example, I don't believe in just putting people into jobs or situations because of their
absolutely
gender
not.
Or
no.
their identity.
No, but what's been interesting, and particularly in the world of techno, after so many years of it being a certain way, you have DJs now coming through, like someone like Helena Hauff or Dr. Rubenstein or Hai, who lives here, and they kick ass, these girls. You know, like you watch them play and they, like, no holds barred, just taking chances and just destroying every club they walk into. And it's just like, why is this taking so long? Because, you know...
they had to be born, you know.
Yeah, maybe that was
in the right time.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I think, to go back to the question, I think it feels exciting, and that's one of the reasons why.
So what technology do you use when you're creating music? I've started trying to record my own music.
Yeah.
Which I'm using Ableton.
Mm-hmm.
What do you use?
I like Ableton and Logic. I mean, I also like old machines, but at the same time, I like a lot of software plugins and stuff. I'm not a purist in any way.
Right.
So I'm interested where you can make those two worlds intersect. So, yeah, I have quite a lot of old stuff in the studio, but then, yeah, a load of new programs and stuff. And I actually think, you know, something that I often say is that I think my studio is in a very... it's an old shipping container down by the water in the Docklands area of London. It's extremely quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And to go back to this idea of it offering some kind of peaceful
solace.
Respite. Yeah, yeah. I think the studio itself is one of the biggest, like, most important instruments on the in terms of the sound of my new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just that finding that quiet place. You know, I like old studio gear and stuff, but I'm not really that interested in being like, I'm not that fascinated with it that I'm like an avid collector or anything. I'd much rather just turn stuff on and kind of see where the atmosphere of the day takes you.
Mm-hmm. And following on from talking about your process in your studio and so on, do you ever work when you're on the road?
No, I find it very difficult, actually. I probably have a few ideas and I jot them down, but I've tried and it's never worked.
So
I think I need that space of my own. Yeah, it's never really worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose if you're going to have like 300 songs anyway, you hardly need to make another 300 while you're on the plane.
I never said they're all good, but yeah.
So, Daniel, on each of these podcasts, I've asked people to submit kind of a 10 tracks, top 10, whatever you want to call it, 10 tracks you like at the moment. And you've submitted 11.
Yeah, sorry about that.
There can be, you know, people can go on to find all these tracks that people have chosen on my Spotify, on the Roisin Murphy Spotify. You'll find these, this amazing selection, actually. It's a really beautiful set of tracks. I was searching through to see if there was going to be any Gary Glitter or something like that.
No, that's number 12. Bitter. I had to get rid of it.
There's not much pop music on there. There's not remnants of it.
No. But it's all electronic music from this year that I found inspiring or interesting.
I would say out of all the people that have, well, out of the people that I've done so far, this has got to be the most deep and obscure in a good way.
Mm.
Truly, it's a, you know, I really advise people to go and listen to these because you won't probably hear them all over the place, these tracks, and they're really, really interesting. It's a great selection. And it's right from now, you're saying, that all these have
come all from this year. Yeah.
So it's a slice of the moment.
Yeah, that's what I want it to be. Yeah, it's a good way of putting it, yeah.
And again, it has this, a lot of ambience in there, and this sense of there being a place to go, like music to go to rest within.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, I think so.
Techno music to rest inside of, or, you know, electronic music that will give you... It's beautiful. It's a beautiful selection. There's even a bit of Jungleist going on.
Yeah, that's a Demdike Stare track. They're one of my favourite artists from Manchester, and they're a great example of this new breed of electronic artists who's taking stuff from everywhere. So yeah, that's in that track. It goes from like a jungle track to it almost sounds like a Kevin Shields My Bloody Valentine track at moments, and then a bit of techno in there. And it's I think that's one of the most fascinating albums of the year. It's called Passion.
Yes, by who?
Demdike Stare.
Oh, right, yes, that's the one. That's At It Again,
that's
is the track.
Yeah.
It's wonderful, yeah. I mean, it has this kind of like pink, white noise.
Yeah.
And it's a sort of, yeah, and again, that thing when I was saying like memories of club music, memories of rave or kind of hardcore, which I think you're hearing a bit of that sort of resurfacing in this kind of melancholic way in electronic music at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's true, yeah.
And that's when I say melancholic, because it's so, it feels like a memory from like a deep folk memory now, you know, because it's so long ago when music started. And also in a way it was never jungle and sort of hardcore. Was never fashionable music, was never cool music in a way. Well, I guess jungle was, but it's borderline not cool.
Yeah, borderline, I think that's true. I think it's very true, yeah.
And so when it's kind of taken into these kind of records and suddenly you realise it, well, you know, something that I always say, which is cool is a completely meaningless word anyway. That's a fantastic track. At It Again. Demdike Stare. Do you want to talk about... Ski Mask.
Yeah, so this is a guy from Germany. His album came out this year. Compro is my favorite album of the year, definitely. He's a real young kid, so I'm not sure exactly. I'd be fascinated to know exactly what his influences are. But to me, I hear all the things we talked about, the early Warp sound, that Orteca, that has a real human, beautiful human quality to it. Yet it's this machine music. I think it's a really, really stunning, beautiful album. But he's like 25 or something, so I don't know what he's some child genius, but I don't know.
25, not a child.
Not a child, but you know, younger than me.
I could do what I like to be 25.
The thing is, he's made two, in my eyes, perfect albums already.
Has he really?
Yeah, so he's a special character, that one.
And the track's called Session Ad.
Yeah.
And then let's talk about one of your tracks, Slow Fade.
Yeah, I picked Slow Fade off the album. For me, having kind of lost myself in my own head in the making of Song for Alpha. When this track came about, you asked me maybe what's the turning point, and if anything, this track was it. When that track happened, I knew where I wanted it to go and how I wanted it to. I kind of pinned the rest of the album around that track. It has, for me, you know, it has the kick of a techno track, but then it has, I think it's as much influenced by maybe like someone like Brian Eno or that kind of, those ambient pads. And I wanted it to be a sort of, some kind of cross between those two worlds, because I think that's exactly where my head is at right now.
Mm-hmm. How do you find music? Where do you search for music?
I still like to go record shopping every week if I can.
Where do you go?
I go to Rough Trade and Fonica and Sounds of the Universe and just kind of walking about. And
they must know you when you're coming in the door.
Yeah, that's quite helpful these days. And and I get sent a lot of stuff, and I spend a lot of time online just searching for stuff. You know, this is all part of, I think, the job of DJing is putting that time into that. And I still love doing it, you know.
And do you have any thoughts on streaming? And
I think I'm fine with it. You know, I mean, I've definitely noticed that more people have heard my stuff these days than before streaming came along. I still love physical records. I still love CDs as well. The album came out on CD, which I know is dying a death itself, but
Why do you like CDs?
Well, that's really how I kind of grew up with music, and also how I first started DJing, boxes of CDs. And I just like being, I don't know, that's a good question. I think it's just what I grew up on. And
do they sound good, do you think?
I think they sound great still, yeah. I think so, yeah.
Is it a good,
but I'm an old man, so now, you know.
I'm thinking about learning new ways to DJ, because I'm not very good, but I'd like to get more into it. Would you advise me to use a CD?
Well, I use CDJs, but I just carry
a
little stick, yeah. Yeah, which is dead easy.
Yeah, I might try that, actually.
Yeah.
I've been on a I haven't DJed for a long time, but I use Traktor.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're saying, because I'm learning Ableton. We're talking about maybe me trying to learn to DJ on Ableton.
It's really interesting what you could do with Ableton as a DJ. I've never done it, but I've seen people do it. And
like what?
Just being able to chop stuff up and loop stuff and have several different things playing at once.
Oh, yeah, give me a mega panic attack already.
Yeah.
I'd like to get in. I mean, I always want to tell the DJ what to play, so it's
that's the first step.
The next step is actually getting back into doing it. So speaking to you, Daniel, has been enlightening. You've shown me so much brand new music that I find fascinating. It's a completely different kind of conversation to any of the ones I've had with other artists, which is great, which keeps everything very exciting and different. And I can't say how much I've enjoyed speaking to you, and you've been so open. Thank you very much.
You too. Thank you very much.
So if you enjoyed this chat I had with the wonderful Daniel Avery, go back and listen to the other ones that I did. They're fabulous too. People like Django Django, Little Dragon, wonderful chat I had with Groove Armada, and see if you like them too. I'm loving doing the Sync sessions, and the response has been fantastic. Everybody who's out there listening, everybody who's out there maybe giving me the thumbs up, writing a little review, or if you're just passing stuff on through social media, it's fantastic if you could just keep on doing that, keep on telling people about it. It means everything to me.
To get your hands on tickets to the hottest gigs and festivals, visit heinekenmusic.ie. Heineken, live your music. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.